Your Notre Dame football weekend starts now on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT. This is the Leprechaun Lunch with Sean and Sharpley. Now your hosts, Sean Stiers and former Irish quarterback Evan Sharpley.
Well, I hope you're having a good Friday out there, Sean and Sharpley in the Leprechaun Lunch on Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT. A little snowy out there. I see you got your winter beard back now, too.
Yeah. It's in strong right now.
That's right.
What I've been doing, I'll grow it out and then I'll have a mustache for one day because that's all my wife will allow.
That's it, huh?
Yeah. I mean, for what a mustache should look like, it looks great.
Yeah.
But not really on me.
Didn't you come in here one day with kind of a Fu Manchu? Did you shaved off the beard? Was that what it was?
I might have had a mustache for one. Well, yeah. I don't know. I don't think it lasted
that long. Does the Fu Manchu reference, do you get that?
Yeah, I know what that is.
You know what I'm talking about? Okay, I'm just making sure.
I don't think I've had one of those.
That's kind of an old one. I remember when I was a kid, because my dad has always had a full beard. And so I grew up with a dad with a beard, and I remember him shaving it like once because this was like in the 70s because his mom wanted to see his face. She hadn't seen his face in forever, so he shaved it off. And that's the last time I remember. So I always thought, like, when I got to high school, I was going to have this cool Fu Manchu handlebar mustache and all that kind of stuff. And as it turns out, I can't really grow one. So it's like, but you, on the other hand, you're probably one of those guys who were like 13.
No.
And you were
no. This took some time.
That took some time, huh?
and now what my wife tells me too is, and other people, when I shave, it takes like 10 years off my life.
Yeah.
So that put me at 21 whenever I shave.
Do look a lot younger. And I mean, if I really wanted to, and I've let it grow, I think maybe 3 weeks is the most, but the problem now, because of my silver follicles, is like it puts another 20 years on me because my face comes in silver.
I've got five very long
gray ones in the front.
Lighter gray hair here on the chin.
Excellent.
I'm hearing about that quite a bit.
No performance enhancement on the front there?
No.
None at all?
Although, see, it runs in our family. We the Sharpleys, we gray pretty early.
Oh, really?
My brother, who's 3 years younger, has more gray hair than I do. Granted, he has a five-year-old and an almost one-year-old. I just have the six-month-old, so I'm sure I'll catch him. And then my dad, we called him Silver Fox. So that's kind of where I'm trending here probably in the next year or two.
I got my first gray hair when I was like 13, middle school. And my mom was completely gray by the time she was 40. So okay. I've actually been lucky. It took me, like, I got the first one really early, and I remember I used to tell people, oh, yeah, that's some paint from shop class.
There we go.
And I didn't even have shop class, but I told people that. But so I got it really early. But, I mean, even, you know, now, obviously, I've got more. But I took me a little bit longer than 40 anyway. Yeah. But whereas my mom was very early, got that Irish gray or whatever they call it. But now, you were kind of joking yesterday. We were talking about what we were going to talk about today, and you said you wanted to talk about Russian doping.
Yeah, why not?
But then Dan Patrick and these guys, they were actually, this guy in Pittsburgh is accusing Tom Brady of being the football version of Barry Bonds and Lance Armstrong.
Yeah.
What do you make of all that?
Well, the other thing, too, which was kind of a major storyline in his show, too, was the lack of chastisement as far as PED use in pro football.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like it's accepted or a slap on the wrist.
There's always been... Football has always been looked at completely different than the others. Well, at least baseball anyway.
I don't get it. I don't get that. I don't get the why should there be a difference?
I don't think there should, but
it's almost like
a gladiator sport. I guess we don't care. These guys are wearing pads and helmets and all this stuff, and I mean, look at Joey Porter, James Harrison. That's who I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like Tom Brady's age too, and the guy is nuts in the gym, and he's just throwing up all kinds of weight. And the claim that Barry Bonds always had, well, look at all the time that I'm putting in to the gym. Well, that's true, But just because you're taking a performance-enhancing drug doesn't also mean that you don't have to put in time in the gym.
That's the big thing is when you're especially the type of PEDs that these athletes are taking is it increases recovery time.
Right.
It allows you to be at peak performance, and then you're able to your physical skills are able to take over. And that's the same argument we hear in baseball is these guys weren't taking performance-enhancing drugs that made them better hitters. It took their great swings and made them more powerful and then able to resist injury over the course of a 160-plus game season.
Barry Bonds, I think you could argue, no matter what he put into his body, and it was obvious that he did because his body completely... Yeah. But he had arguably the best eye of anyone who ever played baseball.
I use his stats all the time. Like his on-base percentage... There was, and I'll have to look this up. We'll look it up during the first break and then bring it back. It had to do with during a certain period of his career, his on-base percentage, his slugging percentage, all of those, it was off the charts.
Right.
You know, there was a certain period of time, I think he had more walks, and granted, some of those were intentional, than entire teams did.
Right.
I mean, he was putting up unbelievable stats. And part of that then is knowing what pitch to swing at and what pitch not to.
Well, and that's what I'm talking about with his eye. It's not just like he knew one from almost the instant that the ball came out of the pitcher's hand.
Though.
Yeah, but he knew from almost the instant that the ball came out of the pitcher's hand what the pitch was. And then he also, whether or not it was going to be a ball or a strike. I mean, he would toy with opposing pitchers. Problem was his ego. Got the best of him. Yeah. If nothing else, Barry Bonds also had the biggest ego of anyone to ever play the game, and he couldn't stand to see the attention that Sosa and McGuire were getting when they were mashing balls out of the ballpark, and that's why he ended up doing what he did.
I still don't understand the difference between if you're looking at Olympic sports, you look at baseball, you look at basketball, even some of these, that's an interesting sport that you don't hear a lot about in terms of PED use.
Basketball?
But these guys.
I was thinking about that too.
But what they're doing to their bodies. Yeah, and hockey too. Yeah. I mean, it's baseball gets, for whatever reason, whether it's because of it being quote unquote America's pastime or a purist type of sport, there was more backlash against that. And then you look at Lance Armstrong and cycling. At this point right now, the culture of the sports, and it's been going on. It's not like this is new. This has been going on for years.
You can't tell me that endurance, and when I say endurance, I'm talking about the course of the season and the physical energy needed to play in the NBA and hockey.
I played a couple of short seasons, 70 games, and I was lucky to not lose over 10 pounds. and I was still working out every day.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You can't tell me that no one in the NBA or playing in the NHL has been doing something because of what you were talking about with the recovery time. Just the sheer amount of games and the physical energy it takes to play those sports. You can't tell me that there's not somebody out there in those sports doing it too.
Well, I saw an interesting tweet the other day defining what performance-enhancing drugs are. I drink so much coffee every day. Caffeine, that enhances my performance.
Sure.
So if I time that up right, which I did today, I was at Cracker Barrel. I timed up my coffee intake right before I got here, so I'm ready to go right now.
Wired and ready to go.
My performance is through the roof.
But the thing with Brady, and this is what happens. This guy, it's a radio host from Pittsburgh who says this, and of course the Steelers are playing the Patriots this week. That's why the conversation came up. But he completely hurls something that is entirely unfounded out there. Just throws it at the wall. About Brady. He has no proof of anything. He's never actually heard anything. He's just saying Brady is 40 years old. He's still playing, performing at this level. Why is no one accusing him of anything? I mean, it's pretty well documented that Tom Brady has one of the craziest diets, the strict way that he both exercises and eats, and he doesn't do a lot of weights. He is predominantly, he does the rubber bands, the resistance bands and all that kind of stuff, yoga, very strict diet. He doesn't eat any sugar. He barely eats any flour, anything like that. If he does, he, and even the specific kinds of vegetables that he eats, fruits, vegetables, that kind of thing. I mean, he's very strict with what he eats. So to go to the lengths to say that Tom Brady is doing this too with zero proof at all, it's just completely irresponsible.
Yeah. I don't know.
Do you think? Do you think that he might be?
There might be something.
But there might be something to anybody, right?
Right, yeah.
You might be over there juicing it.
I should be.
You could get in the ring, little UFC,
Let's go. Well, I don't know about that. I was at a fight a couple weeks ago, and I would be in the heavyweight category. I would not get in. I would not get in the octagon with any of those guys.
Yeah, that's. Did you see that? This just came out. I think Yahoo was the first to talk about it. Floyd Mayweather says that UFC. Of course, he had the big fight with Conor McGregor a few months back, and picked up a technical knockout over Conor McGregor from the UFC in August, and there was all the hype, all the buildup. He says UFC has made him an offer to return. 3 to 4 fights, he could make $1 billion with the UFC.
You got to say yes, right?
I mean, $1 billion, why not? He's already got his, I mean, he hasn't really got his brains kicked in by any means, but he's already, you know.
Go for it.
What's he got to lose? And I was talking to somebody a little bit about this earlier, and they were talking about, well, he's a boxer. Can he really compete? Who cares?
It's money.
I mean, and from UFC standpoint, when you think about this, UFC, they've never had someone throwing Floyd Mayweather out of the equation. I'm talking about a regular UFC guy. They've never had someone who's come in with a name. The guys have essentially made their name being UFC fighters, like Conor McGregor. He worked his way up, became the champ. So to have a guy like Floyd Mayweather, that is cha-ching right there, because of just the name draw and the curiosity for the pay-per-views that they can sell just by having Floyd Mayweather on the card.
You think he does it?
I don't know why not. I would.
Be hard to say no to that.
I mean, again, $1 billion is $1 billion, and if it's 3 or 4 fights, $1 billion, heck yeah. Wouldn't you?
I would.
If they wanted Evan Sharpley, come over there.
Give me $1 billion.
Sharpley training guy,
let's do it.
That's right.
We were talking cage matches last week for that offensive and defensive line award. Hey, Quentin Nelson, MVP.
That's right.
Of the team.
Team MVP.
Still should have won the Heisman.
I mean,
I watched his commitment video again last night.
I saw that too.
That
somebody
is legendary.
Tweeted it.
It is just
the best. He is just this young. It's like, how did that guy become the best offensive lineman in college football?
It's fantastic. of commitment videos, that has to rank as one of the tops.
My friends call me Q. Q is Irish.
Oh man.
And he's got the little young sounding lisp to his voice and the whole thing, and it's like a cross between Top Gun and Stone Cold Steve Austin or something.
That's it. Yeah, that's good.
It was really
good. Both
levels
work there.
It was really good. That's right. And let's go ahead and we'll talk about that.
Do we want to finish up our juicing part? I think it's time. Just let everybody do it. Everyone's hiding anyways.
Just open, free range.
The Russians
all sports.
Have been doing it for over 50 years, maybe longer than that.
Yeah.
If you get a chance or haven't watched it on Netflix, the documentary Icarus.
I still haven't seen that.
Yeah,
and I'm going to be doing some traveling now next week.
Watch that. I mean, it tells a story of the Sochi Olympics and other Olympics too. But the Russians were actually doping during those Olympics because of how they were embarrassed at the previous Olympics.
Yeah, it was their Olympics and they wanted to win.
And I think then, you know, if that's the case and other athletes are still competing with those Russian athletes, obviously they're doing something too.
And this wasn't Icarus. Is it the name of the guy?
No.
Or is it just a,
it's just the name of the,
but isn't it a documentary of
the documentary is fascinating. It starts with
like a Russian trainer who is the one that was giving them the dope.
It starts with a regular old guy and he does amateur cycling. He does one of the hardest races in the world, which basically if you take like the hardest 7 days of the Tour de France and do them 7 days straight, that's what it is. And the first year he did it clean, and he came in 14th. But he basically said, you know, I got done with the race. He goes, there was this group of people at the top. They were just on a different level. And then there was another level. He goes, then there was me.
Mm-hmm.
So his hero growing up was Lance Armstrong. And then, of course, when he found out all, you know, the blood doping, the EPO and all that, he decides in this documentary that he's going to use his body as a test subject. So he starts by getting in contact with the United States Olympic Committee, the guy who heads up the testing for athletes to try to catch the athletes.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, could you put together a program where I wouldn't get caught? Put me on a regular schedule of testosterone and how I would basically beat the system. And this guy gets cold feet. No, obviously. He doesn't want to tarnish his reputation. He goes, but I can get you in touch with the guy who's been doing this for the Russians for the last 30, 40 years.
Uh-huh.
So these two guys start a relationship on Skype, talking back and forth. He comes to the States. You know, the big thing was getting clean urine. So it was how you're transport. They're actually illegally transporting this urine back and forth between the United States and Russia to make sure all these tests lined up. Long story short, what happens is they bring this guy over to the United States after one of his close confidants. This was when it went down that it was basically the state, the Russian state was setting up from the top that, yes, we are going to be cheating. Now, of course, they deny that, but these other guys started getting killed. So this doctor from Russia.
Hold it. Guys started getting killed.
The guys that were part of the training program who were doping athletes.
Oh, they were dying to cover it up. Oh.
No, to cover it up.
Oh, like.
Yeah.
Because they didn't want them to tell their story.
So this Russian doctor now is over here in the States in witness protection.
Oh, my gosh.
And that's kind of how it ends. Of course, what we've seen from the last couple of years is, until recently, and this is kind of we brought this topic up, until recently, all these athletes from Russia were still allowed to compete in the last few Olympics. And now it's, if you can prove your innocence, is what
right,
they're saying,
right,
then you can, and you'd basically be, you'd be flying or competing underneath the Olympic flag versus competing for Russia. But I'm to the point now where people are going to continue to try to skirt those things. They're always looking for an advantage.
Well, that's why
wouldn't
I still
it be
wonder
easier to just monitor it.
That's why I still wonder in baseball right now, have they already found the next thing? Because it's really been a while. You hear like maybe one, two guys a year now.
Well, because when I was playing minor league baseball was under different contract rules than major league baseball. So in minor league baseball, they could blood test.
Mm.
At that time, Major League Baseball, under their bargaining agreement with the owners, they were not allowed to do that. So they were very limited on what they could test for. With blood, it was a little bit different, but even though, I mean, we know now, if you have the financial means and the right minds in place, you can get around those too.
Yeah, and pretty much anyone who's a professional athlete, I'm talking about NFL, NBA, NHL, Major League Baseball, whatever, they have the financial means
right
to pull that off. So you lean more towards, like, getting back to where this originally started, you sound like you lean more towards, you would not be shocked at all if Tom Brady or anyone else is doing something.
To a limited degree. I mean, he doesn't look like...
He does fit the mold because of his age.
Right.
But he is doing a lot of things.
Here's the thing that I think, like, when you think of PEDs, you immediately... Especially, well, yeah, you're taken to McGuire and Bonds and Sosa. And theirs was two things. It was strength, but the recovery side. And for a lot of these players, the PEDs, it's not about getting bigger or adding more muscle mass. It's the recovery, and then it's getting up mm-hmm. for the games every day. You know, so whatever those types of, and that's why amphetamines were really big in baseball for a while, because
right,
it's a 160 game season. You have, you know, cross country travel. They're long days.
And that's why I have a problem with Joe Morgan with those comments that he made a few weeks ago about
there's no
the steroid
doubt in my
users.
Mind that guys for the longest time were using whatever.
Well, they used to have bowls of the amphetamine,
yeah,
the greenies and stuff sitting in the clubhouses back in the 70s and 80s. That's completely performance enhancing as well. So it's just a a different name.
I guess it's where do you draw the line?
Yeah.
How do you view it?
But if the NFL really cared about whether or not its players were doing any of this stuff, they wouldn't be playing on Thursday nights either.
True.
Because they're necessitating these guys doing something above and beyond, something that's going to be more harmful to their body than not beyond just playing, because they're shortening the recovery time as it is. Tom Noy and I were talking about this on Sportsbeat last night, and Darren and I have talked about it before too. If they're going to keep the Thursday games, right now they give the teams a bye week after they play the Thursday games. They need to put the bye week before the Thursday games. It's the easiest solution there is, because then now they say, well, we give them a bye week after, so they get 10 days off between the next game.
It's what happens before.
Yeah, and if you put the bye week before, then they get more time both before and after. You're giving them more time to get their bodies ready beforehand instead of just 3 days in between where they barely get to practice because their bodies are beat up on Sunday, and you're giving them more time afterwards. It just seems to make sense.
I'm with you on that.
For whatever reason, they don't seem like they want to do that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't get it. Tell you what. Let's take a timeout. We come back. We've got a lot of different Notre Dame stuff to talk about. This is going to be our last Sean and Sharply Leprechaun lunch before the Citrus Bowl, because I'm going to be off the next couple of weeks. Darren's going to be off the next couple of weeks. You'll actually be here on Sportsbeat in a couple of weeks, right before the Citrus Bowl. But this is kind of the time where Darren and I are both going to be off a little bit. So we won't have a show the next 2 weeks, but we will have one immediately after the Citrus Bowl. So we'll be able to talk about that a little bit then. And again, you'll be on Budweiser's weekday sports beat. I think, what is it, the last 2 days before New Year's? That week after Christmas, right in there?
The 28th, 29th?
Yep.
Sounds about right.
Okay. So
it's a Thursday and a Friday.
Yep. So Evan will be back here on WSBT at that point. And then I'll be back again after today. Of course, got Sports Beat tonight. We've got Mishawaka Boys basketball tonight, as long as the weather cooperates.
Who are they playing?
They are playing Bremen tonight. And it's actually a girls-boys doubleheader over there at the Cave tonight.
Are you calling both then?
No, just the boys game still.
But you call the girls game. I got a bunch of girls from Bremen there. Got
to do Sports Beat.
That's right.
So we've got Sports Beat going on tonight from 5 until 7 still. Eric Hansen joins me for the first hour. Tom Noy joins me for the second hour. And we also have Zach Osterman coming on from the Indianapolis Star to talk a little IU. He covers the Hoosiers for the Indianapolis Star. So we've got that going on tonight on Budweiser's weekday sports beat. It is 12:23. We'll talk a little Notre Dame IU basketball. We'll also talk a little Notre Dame football coming up next. Get Evan's take on Brandon Wimbush. It's one of those things, we've ended up talking about a lot of other stuff, but I want to get some of your specific thoughts on Brandon Wimbush, maybe what he can get out of this Citrus Bowl and then going into the spring and that kind of thing. We will do that next when Sean and Sharply and the Leprechaun Lunch continue. Michiana Sports Leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
It's always a good show when we get to listen to this song.
Absolutely. Got to get some good vibrations going. Who else you like from that era? I got to see if I can find some other. I don't know if anything can top the Funky Bunch, but Marky Mark. It is 12:27. Sean and Sharply and the Leprechaun Lunch on Michiana Sports Center, 96.1 FM, WSBT, South Bend. Don't forget, coming up tonight, 5 to 7, Budweiser's weekday sports beat. I'll be over at Mishawaka High School for my part of the show. Then Mishawaka basketball afterwards at about 7:30. It'll tip off. Vince D'Addario and I will be over there with the call tonight. Sean and Sharply in the Leprechaun Lunch, brought to you by Sharply Training. With us, you can be a champion. Call today for a complimentary class, 574-226-8234. Visit sharplytraining.com. Perfect time for those stocking stuffer type Christmas gifts if you want to get your kid or someone some training sessions at Sharply Training, I would imagine.
Slugfest Friday nights.
Absolutely.
For baseball and softball players. The Speed Factory on Saturday mornings, 8 to 9 a.m. And then we've got the QB Lab from 10 to noon. Either youth or adult strength and conditioning classes going on throughout the week. We have memberships for that. And then also something new starting up that we're going to be doing. We've talked about measuring the metrics, launch angle and exit velocity and whatnot as far as baseball is concerned. We talk about that around the World Series. I've already partnered up with Blast Motion, but we're kind of taking that to the next step. We're going to be doing some online coaching.
Okay.
So with the purchase of a blast sensor, we're going to have basically a monthly online portal, monthly competitions, weekly challenges. There'll be practice schedules set up on certain drills to do. And then once a month, we'll kind of sit down and have a meeting as far as getting a report card back on what your swing should be doing, giving you those metrics back. So if you purchase this sensor, then you'll do the monthly. And right now, if you purchase the sensor, you get the first month of online coaching for free.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, not too bad.
So you guys have the sensors
people
can buy?
Yep. You can come to Sharply Training and get those sensors.
Good deal.
Yeah.
Sounds like a plan to me. All right, we're coming up on 12:29 on Sean and Sharply and the Leprechaun Lunch. Of course, the Fiesta Bowl, January 1st. Notre Dame's going to face LSU Game Day Sports Beat here at 10 a.m. New Year's Day on WSBT. The top four things, Evan, Notre Dame can take from the Citrus Bowl. What do you think they are?
What can they take?
Yeah. Or what? Let me. I guess I phrased that wrong. The top four things you're looking for from Notre Dame in the Citrus Bowl.
Well, I think, you have to put this in the lens of how can you prepare for 2018. Even though some guys that will be playing won't be on the team next year, that's going to be what I'm looking for. The preparation is important. We touched on this last week, but so is winning. So that's going to be my number one thing that I'm looking for is a win. As far as the development side, if you're looking at, we'll look at the three different facets of the game and how, those can help. It's an opportunity to go against a strong opponent. At this point, I think that you're going to see Notre Dame try to stick with the identity that worked for the most of the season, and that was hard-nosed running, downhill runs, less of the zone reads, slower progressing plays. But it's going to be an opportunity for Brandon Winbush to develop a level of comfortability, which I think should lead into a productive offseason. But I think it's going to start with trying to control the ball and run it. That should lead. That's an identity that can continue. You saw that when Notre Dame played well this year, that was their MO. Defensively, getting back to the basics, there was, and part of this was an inability for the offense to protect the football in the three losses.
Mm-hmm.
And that hurt the defense in those three games, certainly, especially the last two losses against Miami and Stanford. But really honing in on getting off the field on third downs and continuing to force and create turnovers. And then we mentioned and talked about special teams, I believe either last week or the week before. Taking a step forward, you have quite a bit of time off here to prep for this game. You'll have now basically a full year with Brian Polian now at the helm of running the special teams unit. So I think you're going to have some new guys, maybe some new faces, getting some reps during these bowl practices. So you could see some fresh faces, perhaps, in some different roles, creating and getting some experience for next year.
I've got a question for you, because the first thing you said was win. And you are obviously someone who has played at the college level at Notre Dame. And we've kind of talked about this on Sports Beat. And I think that the general consensus is that a win in this game, because it is not a playoff game or even a New Year's Six game, is not as important. Do you think that players look at this a lot differently than maybe media types, those of us looking in from the outside?
It's not a make or break. But you want to win. You don't go to lose. In terms of the mental psyche, a loss wouldn't be backbreaking. But a win could do some great things to lead into the spring. And that's how I would look at it, is you have this momentum. You can continue to carry that momentum. a loss would bring you down. So it'd be like, okay.
Because you play to win the game.
How do we then... It'd be like taking, not necessarily taking steps back as far as development or execution, but mentally now, bouncing back from a loss is still hard.
Mm-hmm.
If you win, it's different. It's almost like, you know, you've been put in this catapult, and it catapults you forward.
And I think the catapult is what you mentioned, and we always kind of talk about, oh, you want to finish and get you going and a good momentum. I mean, obviously momentum ends because it is the last game of the season. But at the same time, finishing a season with a win, especially in a bowl game against another good team, that is a lot better than the alternative, right?
Don't get comfortable with losing.
Yeah, exactly.
It isn't acceptable.
Right.
Win.
And I think that sort of gets lost, again, because it is not a playoff game and the whole thing, but it is
still...
And
there's a million bowl games, too.
Yeah. That's very true. Well, for the rest of it, it's all just entertainment and the whole thing. But so let's go to Brandon Wimbush now. What can he do? Because now he still has several practices to go between now. They're going to get back on the practice field tomorrow after taking finals off. They practiced a little bit last weekend. And so they're going to practice this week. They're going to break. Players are going to get to go home a little bit of time for Christmas. Then they're going to reconvene down there on the 26th, the day after Christmas, in Orlando, getting ready for the bowl game. And they'll have practices down there again, obviously. So he's got a lot of practices to go. What can Brandon Wimbush do? We're not looking for a complete overhaul. We know that's not going to happen in one game or over a span of 5 weeks before one game. But what can he do between now and then to improve?
Well, first off, and I'll ask you this. I'm not 100% sure. I haven't seen it. Are the reps scheme in practice, are they continuing to go 60-40? Have you seen anything other than that? That would be my question. I mean, yeah. And that was pretty well documented throughout the season.
So can he get more reps?
If there was a push towards let's try to rep this out a little bit more. And
maybe that's a question that can be asked tomorrow because Brian Kelly would be available after practice.
Right, and at least trying to develop some more chemistry, get on the same page with the wide receivers because I thought that it was just that level of consistency was up and down throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
I would describe it, there were times when it was a great route, bad throw. There were times where it was a bad route or a drop and a great throw. And a lot of that has to do with the preparation that occurred prior to the season. And also I thought a big part of it was the two transfers that came in. And you had, at least in my mind, and I would like to hear your opinion on this too, is in the spring, I felt like the mesh and the chemistry was pretty good. And
I agree.
I thought during the fall, when you have two brand new faces coming in, trying to force feed reps for new guys, which you have to do if they're going to be part of the rotation. And I felt like a few of the guys that were big parts of the mix in the spring started to take a little bit of a back seat. And I know early on, I mean, if you look at the first three, four games, the number of catches from the wide receiver position alone was minimal.
No, that's very true. And I mean, now granted, Kevin Stefferson wasn't in there, but Kevin Stefferson wasn't doing much during the spring either, much if anything. But at the same time, that's a very good point because we thought, watching the team practice last spring, we thought that the receiver group was going to be one of the great strengths mm-hmm. of the team, that we saw so many good things from so many good people. Miles Boykin ended up being an
great
afterthought.
Off-season.
Yeah.
It was a great offseason.
Yeah. He ended up being an afterthought now part of that was because of just the way they moved things around. They had both he and St. Brown out there at the same time in the spring, but they really didn't do that much, if at all, once the season started.
I had Claypool as a day one starter too.
Yeah. And he came on as the season went on, but you're right. And that was one thing that we were kind of asking coming into the season, how were these transfer guys going to affect mm-hmm. things? Because really, it seemed like overkill because you already had a great receiving unit. And then you decide, well, let's also bring these other two guys into the mix.
I mean,
you're right.
You brought in guys with experience and leadership. And, you know, if you're a coach and approaching this from a coaching perspective, you're bringing guys in, you got to play them, right?
Yeah.
If you don't, you know, and maybe more so at the quarterback position, if you bring in a quarterback transfer, if you don't play that position because it is a true team leadership position, do you risk creating fractures within the team, which can happen? We've seen that happen at other schools, Florida State being one, you know, to a certain extent, Florida this year. But at that position, it did seem a little bit like overkill. And if you don't insert them into the starting lineup early, you know, do you risk losing a player mentally and having that affect the team?
Is it just about reps with Brandon Wimbush, though, or is it also about, and I know they tried to do this during the season, find things he was comfortable doing. There were some things that they could do, but you obviously can't keep doing the same thing over and over again. But at the same time, like the two touchdown passes, the long touchdown passes he threw against Stanford, 83 yards to Stepherson and 75 yards to Equanimeous St. Brown, those were both, it was predominantly catch and run. They were short passes that turned into long runs by those two guys. But like the St. Brown, the drag across the middle, I mean, that's been there all year, but Wimbush by and large just hasn't seen it.
Yeah, I mean, every you have an offense and then you have players that play in that offense. And at the quarterback position, you have to sit down and say, where do you feel the most comfortable? And it was pretty clear, it was pretty evident that a lot of the times Brandon didn't feel like himself or play like himself,
mm-hmm.
at least from what I've seen early in his career, watching him in high school and working with him, you know, one-on-one. And that's why I continue to say, I think that this the potential is there. It's just making sure that you're putting that player in the right position to be able to make the plays that he knows he can make. You know, I think I can do that, or I know I can. You throw the ball much different when you know what you're getting and you know that you have, you know, familiarity with whatever route concept there is.
What do you think about the offseason? I don't think we've talked about this. Does there need to be more of a competition
sure,
in the offseason?
In the spring? Does it really matter in the
spring?
See,
everyone seems to be worried about damaging Brandon Wimbush's psyche.
He's
going to
be just
fine. Like.
He's going to be just fine. They're already at 60-40. What's 50-50? What's that?
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking
10%.
we're talking minimal reps here, you know, between, you know, and then also, I mean, you're going to have to balance getting the third string guy in Avery Davis up to speed.
I guess that's part of it though, too, because now Avery Davis redshirted this year. And if he's on the roster, which he is this spring, doesn't he have to kind of get more reps as well?
He will. I mean, he needs it too. From a passing perspective, he's going to need to get a lot more work throwing. But if we're looking at, you know, we're looking at that prime position of QB1, I don't know if I wouldn't want to say, yeah, we're going to term that it's an open QB comp. Like, you don't need to play it up like that. Yes, these guys are they're getting equal reps. We're going to see what happens. They're both hard workers. You know, they're going to go. It's not going to damage one guy.
Right.
He's going to be just fine. No.
Well, and I guess, don't you have to do whatever it takes to bring out the best
sure.
in the guy? Whatever it takes to do that. And by now they should kind of, they know what Brandon Wimbush's psyche is. They should know what button they can and can't push.
But I don't think that saying, hey, we're gonna split this 50-50 during the spring is gonna break his heart.
Yeah.
They're not playing games in the spring.
You wouldn't think so.
No.
Yeah. What about mechanically, though? It's something we've talked about before. Is that something that they should even be thinking about right now, or is that for once January?
Well, what's so strange, you know, about that conversation is there, at least in my experience, there wasn't a lot of mechanical talk during practice. A lot of then the extra development time was you getting reps on your own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once you're in practice, you have a practice schedule, you have the horn is blowing, you know, every period. There aren't a lot of, you know, slow moments to say, all right, you know, we're going to slow this down. Let's work through the technical side of how we're throwing It is, we got to get reps with the wide receivers. Next period, hey, we're with the tight ends. Now we're with the full team. Okay, we've got 7-on-7 now. Now we have 11-on-11.
So that's something he needs to be figuring out this summer, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, it's...
If that's...
And, well, honestly, it's going to be... He's going to have to be proactive about, you know, taking a closer look. Unless that's, you know, that's a step that more programs are taking, which, you know, in being around college football and around college quarterbacks, you don't see a lot of that. The expectation is once you're in college and you're a Division I college quarterback, you should know how to throw.
You shouldn't have to worry about that. But obviously there are at least a couple minor issues, which you've detailed here before. Yeah. There are a couple things that could be cleaned up that
right.
would
and
lead
I,
to more
and
accuracy.
I think that that's the biggest thing is it's polishing.
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking about like he's
complete
broken.
Rework. Yeah,
yeah. You know, it's still there. It's minimal, small polishes.
Yeah. All right. It is 12:44. We're going to take a timeout. When we come back, Notre Dame and IU playing tomorrow in Indianapolis Crossroads Classic. Purdue and Butler, of course, playing tomorrow down there as well. But we'll let you hear a few thoughts from Mike Bray, the Crossroads Classic, and IU and all that coming up. Again, the game here tomorrow, 2:30 on WSBT. We'll hit that next. Sean and Sharpley, Leprechaun Lunch on Michiana Sports Center, 96.1 FM, WSBT. We're coming up on 12:49, just 11 minutes away from 1 o'clock in the Rich Eisen Show on Michiana Sports Center, 96.1 FM, WSBT. Broncos beat the Colts last night in a game heard right here on WSBT. It was the final Thursday night game of the season. We've already talked about our opinions as far as Thursday night football. I guess, did you hear what happened during that game? I think it was at halftime. Somebody got married at the game. What do you think about getting married at an NFL game or any sporting event?
I guess if the price is right, the teams are going to say yes. I don't know. It seems a little weird to me.
I kind of think so, too. I'm going to guess you probably didn't get married at a stadium,
no,
did you?
No.
No.
We had a nice venue.
Or a gym.
No, not a gym either. The old bag factory in Goshen.
The old what?
Old bag factory.
Really?
Beautiful.
Is it like a renovated kind of old building sort
it's,
of
yeah,
thing?
Yeah, it's, I mean, very vintage. Okay. There's shops around it too. And we had both the wedding and the reception right there, which was the way to go.
There you go. All right. A lot of NFL coming up here over the next few days on WSBT. Of course, we've got the Notre Dame basketball game, 2:30 tomorrow, Notre Dame and IU. Tomorrow night, Chargers at the Chiefs. Then Sunday, we've got three games. Packers at Carolina. Sounds like Aaron Rodgers is going to be back.
Does that make them a contender now, huh?
I think it's got to.
He's
Panthers
pretty,
defense
he's
is good. Looking good. You never broke a collarbone or anything like that, did you?
No.
Michael Floyd did. I remember that. And I was.
It's painful.
I remember being amazed when he came back later in the same season. And it seems like this happens. A lot of people are talking about whether Rodgers should or shouldn't. I mean, it's not like it's never happened before with these collarbones.
I mean, there's always the risk that it breaks.
Well, that's I mean, you have to, the way, do you remember seeing the hit that he took?
Yeah.
Where he essentially just came down, the guy tackled him, and I know that McCarthy was mad about the tackle and all that stuff, but it was essentially just, he came down on one shoulder, the guy tackled it, it was, what would you call that, perpendicular to the ground, where the guy just came on shoulder on top of shoulder, collarbone snaps, and I mean, that's, you get hit like that, there's nothing you can do. It doesn't matter if you've broken it before or not.
It's probably going to break.
Yeah, exactly. So then also Sunday, Rams and Seahawks in a big one in the NFC West. Sunday night, Dallas and Oakland, they're both still alive. They're playing Sunday night, 7:30. All those games here on WSBT. Then Monday night, Atlanta at Tampa Bay. I think Tampa Bay has to be one of the biggest disappointments of the entire NFL season. All right. At least we both agree on that. We've got the Crossroad Classic tomorrow. Notre Dame and Indiana down at Bankers Life Fieldhouse. And here's Mike Bray talking a little bit about some of his thoughts about the Crossroads.
Well, what is this, the seventh year of it, I believe. You know, it's been a great idea, you know, to have the four in-state schools play. Number one, you have a sold-out building, and you really have a great atmosphere in the building. I mean, and we know how Indiana, the state of Indiana, loves basketball. So I think that's been positive. I've been encouraged the last couple years that our people have now started to come out more. You know, I was leery about getting into this because historically, long before me, we had not drawn well when we went to Indianapolis and played. Our people just didn't really come out. But they have been, and that's been good. You know, that then now you feel better about the thing, even though we do know we'll be thoroughly outnumbered. We're still going to have a pretty good section on Saturday. So, you know, recruiting, you know, when you're recruiting in the state, I think all the in-state kids watch this. They're probably at it. All the in-state kids that are within, you know, they've got tickets to it. We can't leave tickets because it's not a home, but I bet you they're all there. So it's a nice showcase, you know, for, you know, your in-state recruits as well.
Never been down to the Crossroads Classic, have you?
I've not.
I've been in a couple of games inside Bankers Life, nice arena, and the whole thing, and I imagine it's got to be a really great environment. But this matchup, it's an interesting one when you look at the fact that essentially I think it's going to come down to if Notre Dame hits perimeter shots or not. Mm-hmm. And that starts with Matt Farrell. The Irish are hitting almost 43% on
that's
their threes.
Good.
And IU is shooting only 32%, and they don't not guard good. The perimeter well either. Yeah, and they're giving up 40%. So it's, and Mike Bray was also talking yesterday about how Indiana has outscored everybody in the paint. They're about even rebounding teams, but they've got more size right now. So it really seems like it's going to come down mm-hmm. to if Notre Dame hits their threes
shoot,
or
yeah.
not. Yep.
Yeah.
I would think that's going to be it.
And then limit the damage in the paint a little bit too.
Yeah, and they've got to figure, and that's the thing, they because they still consistently give up a lot of offensive rebounds. They haven't been rebounding that well, and these two teams are pretty even rebounding. It's like one off. What is it? Indiana averages just under 36 boards per game, and Notre Dame averages just under 35. So it's a difference of about
but
one rebound
yeah, if you're
per game.
If you're trading twos for threes, then you're going to be okay.
Yeah, and of course, the whole thing starts when you're talking about the perimeter, the whole thing starts with Matt Farrell.
Yeah, there's no question about it. I think that's an ongoing discussion with him and a reminder of him. When we scrimmaged on Tuesday, we scrimmaged, and I actually told him, I said, we played some 4 or 5 minute periods just to get a sweat in the middle of exam week. I said, if you have just a little window of a look, I want you to take it today. Like, see what that feels like. You can't turn them down. Even early in the game, you gotta hunt it for us early. And so that's a work in progress. We gotta stay after him about that. I think his teammates have been on him about that.
Hunt the shot. And he was a little bit more aggressive against Delaware, and he needs to continue that because he's in that point guard mold.
He needs to come and play with me. I'll show him how to hunt the shot.
You'll teach him how to hunt the shot, huh?
There's a shot I'd pass up. They all look good. You better believe that they're going in, too.
I'm sure. The all-time three-point leader in the history of...
Tied. Tied now.
Oh, tied now. But you left number one.
I left number one.
Marshall High School. In Michigan, of course. All right. Take a timeout. Back to wrap things up. Sean and Sharpley, Leprechaun Lunch, WSBT. Winding down our final show prior to the new year. Any New Year's resolutions, Evan?
Hit more dingers.
I know we're a couple. Hit more dingers?
Yeah.
Well, you don't have to worry about actually hitting them.
I still swing a little bit.
Get the kids to hit
That's
more
right.
dingers.
The kids need to hit more dingers this summer.
Absolutely.
More TDs in the fall, too.
All right. It is. We're just less than 2 minutes away, about a minute and a half away. Rich Eisen Show coming up around the corner.
You want my Barry Bonds stats?
Hit us with some Barry Bonds stats real quick.
If you were to come back and play right now, you go 2 for 5 in every game with a home run and a single.
Okay.
Your batting average would be .400, and you've had 162 home runs for the entire season, a home run a game.
Okay.
Your OPS would still be lower than Barry Bonds in 2004.
Really?
That's how good of a season he had.
No kidding.
That's pretty good.
Man.
That's one of my.
You really like Barry Bonds, don't you?
Of the swings I like to watch, he's one of my favorites. Edgar Martinez is one of my favorite righties. And then did you know that in the EA games that Barry Bonds wouldn't allow them to use his likeness? That's how great he was. So they had to create a player, right, that had his skill set, and he'd hit like 700 foot home runs.
But he had to wear like 35 or 38.
Something random.
And
maybe 99. Well, Jordan did the same thing. Michael Jordan did.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't... Because he wasn't getting enough kickback? Was that the thing? That's why he wouldn't do it?
And then the other interesting stat is from 2000 to 2014, his WAR, wins above replacement, if it's higher, it was fifth. He was ranked fifth over that time period, and he didn't play from 2007 to 2014. So minus 7 years of not playing, he still was fifth.
Man.
Pretty valuable.
We're brought to you by Sharply Training. Call 574-226-8234, sharplytraining.com. Have a great new year. We'll talk to you right after the new year, Sean, WSBT South Bend.